Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends.
Rolling. Another week for the Fiends. How you doing, Michael Dean?
I'm good. This is Michael Dean Fiend broadcasting here on 100 billion watts from my windowless bunker outside of Beast Lick, Wyoming.
We ain't in the house. We in the bunker, baby.
Yeah. I know. And I believe you're broadcasting from an abandoned oil platform outside of Seattle in the international waters.
I am, actually. In fact, I'll add a little oil reverb on this. Just, ding. Just for the effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I'm in Kitty Lick, Wyoming. So, we are now streaming. We have streaming audio. I went out and paid money to get a streaming server set up so you can listen to Freedom Fiends on your mobile device or smartphone.
Right. Well, you learned something new from the young whippersnappers out there in Freedom Media Land. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, I talked to several people this week who were like, dude, I only ever listen to podcasts on my phone. With you guys, I have to download it. It's hard. Make it streaming.
Instant gratification, baby.
I know. It's like these kids today. It's like, it's hard to take 1 minute to get great audio for free, magically going through the wires into my... I'm just thinking like, when I was your age, we used to go to the library and read books.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
It reminds me of this bit. What's the name of the comedian? I forget, but he's basically talking about how, you know, they're flying in the plane and the newest thing was Wi-Fi on the plane now. And his neighbor was, you know, surfing on the internet on the plane. And the stewardess comes on and says, due to technical difficulties, our wireless will be down for about the next half hour. And he scoffed. He was like, oh my God, like, you know, the world had just ended. And the comedian basically just looked at him and says, really? You're flying in a miracle plane, 30,000 feet in the air at 500 miles per hour, surfing the web, learning about anything and anything you want in the world, and you're upset.
I know. It's like, talk to your grandmother about that, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, my dad, they had cars when he was born, but not everyone had cars when he was born. He was born in 1920, man.
Yeah. It is an amazing thing, and, you know.
1921.
I guess the market is pushing. I mean, that's people want their instant gratification. It's obviously a human thing, a human need. And so we've stepped up to meet that need, and now you can listen to us anytime you want.
So you don't have to have Miracle Fade. You could go, of course, the Freedom Fiends are available streaming for my mobile device.
Yeah.
And there's I put a link on the sidebar there. It's a picture of a pretty girl. She's probably talking on the phone, but I imagine she's listening to Freedom Fiends with the phone up to her ear.
That's totally what she's doing.
But that's the link that you go to get the link to bookmark on your phone. That's so much work. I don't want to have to bookmark a link.
We're working on the implant to where we're just going to beam Freedom Fiends directly into your frontal cortex.
And you won't be able to turn it off.
Right.
How's that for liberty?
Yeah.
And we'll make you do it.
I have to turn it on and off? Oh.
When we're running the world, when we're president and vice president, we'll force people. We'll use tax money and we'll take all the non-libertarians off to re-education camps and implant things in their brain.
That's how we get there, right? We're like the old Soviets. We don't want our stateless society, but we're going to force you there.
Yes.
Obviously, we're kidding.
We're just kidding.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah, so, and that costs us money. So if anybody wants to make donations, this is coming out of my pocket. But we do have our first corporate sponsor. We're really happy about
that. Yeah, coming up in the world.
It is Vaporsmith's e-cigs.
Oh, yeah. And the thing I really like about this is it's just a product that we loved. You know, I even got a hold of it, or I first found out about it from listening to an advertisement. I love advertisements, and I hate it when people go off on the, you know, advertisers are controlling your brain. The big corporatists are controlling you. But it,
I like good advertisements, and a lot of ads are intrusive, you know, and it's like, it's stupid to complain about it because you're getting media free because there's advertisements generally.
Exactly.
But first of all, any ads that we make are going to sound really good. I mean, I listen to this podcast. I listen to each episode 3 or 4 times, and actually more now that I can have it playing in a streaming loop in the background. The streaming that we have is a loop. It's this thing called Auto DJ. It's a shoutcast server, and it just plays a random shuffle of all of our episodes.
It's not the robot version of your wife.
What's that?
Auto DJ.
Auto DJ. Yeah, but I mean, Vaporsmith's, what did you say about the Jay-Z model of advertising?
Well, yeah, I mean, back when he was coming up, you know, that was his thing. He would set the trend. He would be like, oh, you know, we're going to drink Cristal, or, you know, we're going to wear this type of clothes. And he'd rap about it. You know, he'd rap about what he loved in the high class stuff. And people trusted him. He was the trendsetter. And so, you know, he would go to those companies then and ask them for a cut and say, you know, I didn't make an ad for you, but I'm increasing your sales, you know. F you, pay me. And we're not strong-arming it like that. But no. I like the model of, you know, we go out and find something we like and we want to consume, and then we extol its goodness, and the proprietor or the CEO or whoever it may be can say, oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and, you know, we had the option of getting paid in money or product, and I said product. We said product because I love this. I mean, I smoke 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day for, like, since I was, like, 17. And it was going to kill me, and I believe that this is actually going to extend my lifespan because it has all the nicotine, but it doesn't have all the other crap. And I was skeptical at first. If anyone wants to go back 3 or 4 episodes and listen, we first told me about it. I was like, pfft.
Yeah, yeah. The record is there. Michael was a skeptic.
And now I am.
You got mad at me. You said I was talking about the e-cigs for too long on the cast. You reprimanded me.
I know, that was off mic, but, you know, and then you were like, no, it's a liberty thing, and, you know, we can work it in, and I'm like, ugh, okay. And now I'm like, I've quit smoking, man. I love these things.
Yeah.
They're great.
Me too. I had a couple cigarettes last week because I forgot my e-cig at home, and I was really bummed about it, and my new work friends helped me out, and it took me 2 cigarettes just to get through the day, and I was fine. I did still enjoy the flavor of natural tobacco, but not so much to where I'm ever missing it when I'm smoking my e-cig. You know,
yes.
I like the flavor of the e-cig, and there's a multitude of flavors. One of the other things, and this has a liberty relation too, is there's a clove flavor. And take it or leave it, some people hate the clove flavor, or some people don't like clove cigarettes. But in college, I loved, you know, that was my special treat, was buying a pack of clove cigarettes. And they've recently been banned, you know, with the banning of flavored cigarettes. So it's nice to have that clove flavor. It's pretty similar, and it's got that clove feel to it, and I dig it.
Now I just want them to come up with something that's like a simpler, more direct and clean way to ingest caffeine.
There's no dose.
Nah, I don't want a pill. I want something that would go with vaping better. Like maybe something like a roll-on, you know, like it would come in like what deodorant comes in, that same kind of bottle that would have like DMSO mixed with caffeine, and you'd vape with one hand, and with the other hand, you just roll this thing on your inner arm.
You don't dig the combo of vape and coffee? I found it very enjoyable, actually.
I'm kidding. Yeah. But you're spending too much time talking about e-cigs. Let's move on. No, let's not, man. I love them. Vaporsmiths are great, and you should go to vaporsmiths.com and buy them. Get their starter kit. It'll change your life. It changed our life. We're evangelical about this. And tell them the Freedom Fiends podcast sent you.
I also think it's organic, and it does open up another conversation about technology skirting the nannies, because I think this is another good way of
cheaper.
Skirting
you
the nannies.
You spend less money because they're not taxed
yet. Well, with this kind of technology, you bring up a good point. You know, what about other delivery methods for other types of non-prohibited drugs, and maybe even prohibited drugs that the market could come up with? I know there's, once sort of that hymen is broken, you know, there's usually a flood of new products of this type or using that idea. I'd like to see other ways of ingesting alcohol.
I have a friend that was a junkie that told me he once shot a syringe full of gin.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
It was very unpleasant. He said it was like He said it was an instant hangover.
Oh, I can imagine. I imagine that would burn. Gin? Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't that much. It wasn't even nearly a shot. Oh. A shot would probably kill you, but yeah. It was a syringe, you know, a couple cc's of grain alcohol or something.
Well, I remember going through the DARE program in fifth grade, and they had a small blurb. You know, it wasn't a whole page like marijuana or a whole chapter like cocaine. It was just one sentence about non-beverage alcohol, I think they called it. And I was really interested. I wanted to know what they were talking about. I was like, where can I get this non-beverage alcohol?
Isn't that
alcohol?
Like the sweetened stuff? Or
I don't know. I don't know what it was.
Or is it drinking Sterno?
It might have been. They might have been talking about taking a shot of mouthwash like the park rangers in Wyoming do. Park rangers as in the bums who hang out in the park, not as in the government employees. Which the bums that hang out in the park are probably more productive than the park rangers that are paid for by the government.
Hey, do you like how I did two birds with one stone a minute ago there? We've decided that we want to start doing station IDs more, like throughout the cast, every 10 or 20 minutes at some point, somehow saying, "You're listening to Freedom Fiends," because we're now streaming for our stream and through the Liberty Radio Network stream. And a lot of people tune in and listen for an hour and then stop. And it's like they don't even know what podcast they're listening to. So,
right.
But I did that along with corporate whoring at the same time.
Nice.
Yeah, I said, make sure that you tell Vaporsmiths.com that you heard about the product on Freedom Fiends. Yeah, we're talking about how Hannity does his advertising. What did you say? It's like he'll be talking about
Iran, and they've got their new heavy water reactor. By the way, if you have hard water, go ahead and call hard water blah, 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 or whoever he pitches for as their hard water. He's got like no seg skills, or he just, I don't know if a little blurb pops up and tells him what to do, but he can spruce it up a little bit if he wanted to.
He would do better if he segued with, "We need to be bombing the brown people in Iran back to the Stone Age." And
by the way, you know what else is Stone Age? Having hard water.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, Hannity needs to up his seg game, definitely.
So you know what the name of this episode is?
No. Do you?
Yes.
What?
But I never really do. But I think I'm going to call it, "What's More Important, Your Right to Bear Arms or Your Right to Vote?"
I vote for that as the name of the podcast.
Let's discuss it. You know, the idea, I got the idea from some lefty site where they were, I think it was Democratic Underground or
Democracy Now!
Politico.
Okay.
And they were dissing Tea Party people.
Ah.
And saying, like, you know, a lot of these people sound like they think their right to bear arms is more important than their right to vote.
Well, because it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, voting can't protect you from intruders. Voting can't defend your life. It can only take rights. Guns preserve rights. Voting can't hunt your dinner for you. It can't feed you. Well, it can if you don't mind, you know, someone else stealing and using the government guns to steal for you. I guess voting can feed you then, but it's immoral. Absolutely immoral.
I think it's obvious to anybody who has half a brain. I guess I'm being a little extreme there because some people just aren't in the know. But, you know, you did put that on your Facebook, and it seemed to me at least everybody in your network got why the Second Amendment is obviously
everybody,
more important.
Which means I've done a good job pruning out my lefty friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And deleting them.
Well, I'm reading Judge Napolitano's new book, which is "It's Dangerous to Be Right When the Government is Wrong." And he's got in his preface or his introduction, he goes off on a good bit about the difference between natural rights and government rights. And so my first thought, you know, after I read your comment was, obviously, you know, the Second Amendment, it doesn't give you your right, but it is talking about a natural right, which is the right to self-defense. Voting is a politically granted right. It's not a natural right.
Yeah, and somebody took me to task offboard for the phrasing of "your right to bear arms" versus "your right to vote." You know, he thought I was a minarchist.
Right.
I'm speaking about the actual right to bear arms versus the fictitious, the positive right, legal positivism that's granted by being able to vote. Bearing arms is infinitely more important to me than voting.
Well,
I don't vote.
Voting, it's a political right. It doesn't derive itself from nature. We don't have a natural right to choose who gets to be leader of 310 million people. I mean, that's very unnatural. It's not natural at all. But self-defense is an obviously natural right. I mean, like, I don't know if – I think we do mention in the movie, you know, every animal has some means of defending itself, whether it be a squid with ink or a cat with claws.
I made a really cute video that I'll upload for this cast. It's called "Pretty Kitties Lick While Listening to Stefan Molyneux." Is that how you say his name?
Molyneux. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Molyneux. Yes, that wonderful Irish bastard who lives in Canada. No, he's great, man.
I'm really glad you started listening to him. He is sort of...
He's so anarchist, he makes you sound like a neocon.
Don't ever say that.
But it's true.
I get the hyperbole, and I'll grant you it, because Stefan Molyneux is, you know, light years ahead of a lot of people when it comes to a lot of things. And he's just such a great communicator, the way he...
He's so pleasant, too.
He's really great with his metaphors, too. And just on the spot, he's a pleasure to listen to. And, you know, he puts it so simply that even though I've known of the concept before or other writers have talked about it, he just makes it seem so obvious.
Well, I started listening to him because now that we're syndicated on LRN.FM, and people should go there to Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM, there's a 24-hour feed there of streaming audio of us, antiwarradio.com, Free Talk Live, Stefan Molyneux, and like 8 other great podcasts and radio shows. I mean, just put it on. You know, if you're not quite there yet, if you want to be anarchists like us, just put it on. You'll be brainwashed within a day or two.
Brainwashed in the sense that your brain has been cleaned of all its uncleanliness. Yeah,
that's what they'd say in AA. People would come into AA and be like, I don't want to be here. Someone made me come here. I don't want to be here. This is like brainwashing. And the old timers would say, maybe your brains need washing.
Yeah, I dig it.
Which is actually, sometimes people get sentenced to go to AA, which is really fucked up, because AA is a completely voluntary thing, and we've talked about how it's a good example of how things would work in minarchy or anarchy, of being able to run an organization well without...
Just think about how much that sours the whole process.
It really does, and I was talking to someone yesterday who was sentenced to it, and... confuse that with AA, and that's not the first person I've met like that. Right. They're like, AA is horrible. They force you to go, and I'm like, no, some judge forced you to
go. Exactly, and that's where the problem
is. That's not AA.
Yeah, that is the force. That's always the issue. And, you know, sometimes people try to take libertarians to task and say, or freedom-minded people to task, say, well, you know, is government really, that's the source of every problem, really? That's just a catch-all. And no, the source of every problem or every major social problem is force. It's aggression. It's the violation of the non-aggression principle. And by far, the biggest culprit in that is the government, and specifically the United States government.
The government is not the only problem. I mean, the mafia... But then again, do you get into that's a government?
They're similar in the fact that they're a gang of thieves, and the mafia is organized like the government. Yeah. So they're very similar in a lot of ways, and they did a lot of similar things. I mean, protection. I mean, it's the same basic concept. They force you to pay them money so they can quote-unquote protect your property. Who does that sound like? Police?
You came up with a great term, like, in passing to me, and I typed it up and put your name after it and put it on Facebook, and like 12 people shared it. It's a really good meme that I think people should share more. It's voting is basically a suggestion box strung up in the cotton field by our slave masters, Nima Vedati.
Yeah. It makes sense. I guess I coined it in that respect. I mean,
I searched on the internet, so you did coin
it. Okay. Good for me.
At least that exact phrasing.
I've heard the sentiment before, I'm sure. You know, maybe even from Stefan Molyneux or others.
Okay, then let's not claim it. He'll send his libertarian thugs to beat you up and take money.
And even on second reading, I wish I would have said massa instead of slave masters.
That's kind of racist.
Is it?
Massa? Slave massa?
Or just massa. I don't think it's racist. I think it has a connotation, and it's a historical connotation. So,
okay.
I wouldn't find racism in it. Somebody might, but
I wouldn't change it. It sounds good as it is.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really feel like that's how it is. And I've even had some people, you know, when I've brought up this idea before, not in these particular words, but I've got a friend who I guess is sort of a liberal. He's a self-proclaimed liberal, you know. When we talk, I always try to push him towards my point of view. And he brought up to me basically, you know, it's like if you were working at a Subway and you don't get to choose who your manager is necessarily, but wouldn't it be good if you did? You might hate both your bosses, but at least you get to make the choice. And it's not like that, because we can't – I mean, I guess we can withdraw our consent, but it's a very difficult thing to do. It's not like quitting a Subway, withdrawing your consent from the American system. It's not at all. You know, there's – ways they tax you if you try to expatriate. If you don't pay your taxes and choose
if you leave the country, you have to pay money. to stop being an American citizen and become a citizen exclusively of another country.
Right. It's like paying damages to get out of a contract that you never sign.
And you can't stop being a citizen of America and not become a citizen of another country. That's renouncing your citizenship, and that's treason.
Right. And how horrible is that? I mean, that is completely horrible to say that the global system or the social system is saying, basically, or at least in the American system's eyes, that, okay, you have to be somebody's. Somebody else has to own you. Some other government has to have some sort of claim to ownership on you, your property, the fruits of your labor. How awful is that?
Speaking of I own me, we have an interesting little story this week.
So yeah, basically, I got an email from, I guess it must be a bot or an automated email generated from YouTube telling me that my I Own Me video has copyrighted material.
That you don't own your I Own Me video.
I don't own my I Own Me video.
Which you do. You wrote everything in it.
Yeah, and it's at the end of the video. That's why I think it's a bot. If anybody would have watched it at the end, lyrics, music, video produced by yours truly.
Yeah. But what it was the company that administers the Guns and Weed movie.
Distributes it. Administers it.
Right. Well, no. They distribute it, and they contract it out to this company that administers rights for all of their stuff, digital rights, in England. And that company,
I thought you meant administer like one would administer a vaccine. This is your freedom vaccine. Your anti-statism sort of vaccine.
It sort of is. But their Autobot or the Google Autobot detected that they basically, like, if somebody puts Guns and Weed up on YouTube, they're fine to do it, but the Autobot will put ads on it and we'll get the money.
Right, right.
Which I don't have a problem with. I like that system.
Yeah.
At least for us. It's not even a copyright-based thing because the movie is Creative Commons.
Right.
But you'll get ads on it if you put it up. So the song I Own Me that you wrote and have a video for and have had up since a year before I met you, actually met you because of that video. We used that song at the end of the Guns and Weed movie during the end credits. And the Autobot just tasted or sensed that same piece of digital material, that audio, was somewhere else on YouTube and assumed that you didn't write it and own it and sent you they don't send takedown notices anymore, which I like. They just put ads on it and give the money to the owner. But you didn't want ads on it, and we got it straightened out. We got the ads taken off it. But it was just kind of ironic to have the central scrutinizer Autobot tell you, you do not own I Own Me.
Yeah, it was kind of ironic and funny. And, hey, it gave us a decent story to tell in the podcast. So no harm, no foul.
Speaking of robot voices, I got two stories. One is this morning, DJ, we actually have been on the same schedule for the last few days, which is kind of weird. Like, I've actually been getting up when she gets up. And she was getting ready for work, and it was snowing, which is kind of cool. First snow of the year. And we heard this, like, this sound outside. It was
like the trombone on Peanuts?
Yeah, right. Sort of. But it's what it is there's this municipal warning system in Beast Lick, Wyoming. Okay. And there's loudspeakers like around the city. They're up on telephone poles, like, you know, every 8 blocks apart or something in some neighborhoods that they use for like civil defense stuff. You know, like if the North Koreans were bombing, they'd tell you to seek shelter or whatever. And it was actually a tornado warning, which is pretty rare here. And I've only ever heard this speaker system once before. And it was like for hail. We had hail, like, you know, big 2-inch in diameter hail, and it was warning to get away. But the thing is, as well-meaning as this service provided by the city is, we can't clearly hear it from our house.
Right.
So all we hear is, and then, like, there's nowhere on TV, there's nowhere online to find out what it's about. So it's just general, you know, it could be anything from tornado warning to, you know, we're taking all the libertarians and anarchists to the camps. Please say goodbye to your cats and meet us on your front lawn.
Right.
Or it could be just, it's cold out, wear a sweater. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Well, that's why the government wants to have their text message system put in everybody's phone to where they can speak directly to you like a telescreen.
Yeah. Which, you know, in LibPair, that would exist.
Well, it would be optional. You could choose to opt out from it.
And it wouldn't give you bullshit warnings like they do now. Like, the, you know, the fear level is at orange. You should be more afraid.
Yeah. That about sums up pretty much all government content as far as putting things out in the press. You should be more afraid. That's the main theme.
I really like on American Dad how Stan Smith has a little threat level thing that he can move the little arm on to, on his fridge.
That is definitely an excellent show. I did see a great episode of it. It didn't really have much to do with, its political commentary at all. But there's an episode, I think it's a Halloween episode, where CeeLo Green, the...
I loved it. You saw that great one? It was
the hot tub episode.
Yeah, the hot tub of... Yeah,
maybe you should, if you can find a YouTube clip of one of the hot tub songs, we might post that.
And I had to look up who CeeLo Green was, because I'm not hip.
Ah, yes.
So the other robot voice... tyranny thing we have is this video that I found, and we're trying to cover more stories like this that no one else covers, because one thing I have noticed about listening to a rolling shuffle random 24/7 of all the hot libertarian podcasts including us and hot anarchist podcasts including us is that they all kind of cover a lot of the same stuff, like the news of the day. Right,
but that's not a problem that's specific to Liberty Media, because if you listen to talk radio, Hannity, Limbaugh, Levine, all the neocon talk radio guys.
Oh, it's news. They're news. And I have no problem with that, but I think there's a niche that we've sort of been tending into that I want to tend more into, which is more personal and kind of timeless. Like, I want people to be able to listen to these episodes 5 years from now and not be caught up too much in us talking about the news of the day. But we'll still talk about it. But so this is a good one. I was looking around on YouTube, on eBay for gun stuff. They don't sell guns, but they sell like holsters and gun-related things, I think. Which? I was actually looking for gun books.
Okay.
And I somehow ended up finding this. Somebody is selling the patent for a ballistic fingerprinting system, like the thing that would put a serial number on the back of every bullet to help trace bullets better, which sounds like a good idea to people, like, oh, that would help solve crimes. And, you know, non-gun people think, well, why would you be opposed to that? Unless you're a murderer, you're not a murderer, then you shouldn't mind that. But the thing is, that would extremely increase the price of bullets. Correct. Which is, you know, infringing.
And it doesn't really solve the problem. Like any government action trying to force the market to do one thing, the market will get around it. Criminals will just buy bullets from another state that are shipped in.
Or make them their own. Or make them. I mean, if you think if a gang has enough chemistry knowledge to have someone actually running a meth lab, not just a bathtub meth lab, but a real meth lab like a lot of gangs do, and they have the technology to make submarines that can smuggle drugs.
Right.
You don't think they'd have the technology to make bullets?
Gangs will also have fully automatic weapons.
They do already.
Well, that's what I mean. They already have it. There's a ton of restrictions on that, but that doesn't stop your average gang member from having one. I don't know about average gang member, but enough of them.
Yeah. Gang member or government gang member, they all have full auto.
So again, the point here is the force. If you try to make a law, which I think didn't California has something like that for in the future?
Yeah, they have a law like that, that it's actually in action, but they're trying to catch up with the technology. And this is somebody who's selling
a patent for the technology.
The patent for like $2.5 million. It's not the only bullet IDing system, but it's one of them. And I was thinking some rich libertarian or anarchist should buy this and bury it.
The post did seem kind of, I don't know if it's called a post when it's on eBay, but the item seemed kind of, I don't know if it was fishy, but you know, the seller had a good reputation. He had some decent feedback. But the item...
It was a law firm that sells patents on
eBay. But the item description was so sparse, and I'm thinking if you're going to spend $2.5 million, you're going to get in contact with them anyway. Maybe that's...
Yeah, I think that it would be interested parties only, and they'd contact them. They'd probably send them, you know, a 40-page technical description of what the patent is. But the thing I really liked was there was a link to a YouTube video about it, and it had this really cheesy auto-generated female robot voice. Did you see the video?
No, I didn't see the video.
It was like, welcome to the future of law enforcement technologies. Yeah, I'll link that. It was so square, man. It was so square.
These kind of – the government forcing people to do things like this, it's not going to work. You know, if there was some type of system – I mean, I guess there can be the technology. If you said, you know, here, let's put this out there. Anybody who wants to ID their bullets and pay the extra can. But do you think anybody would?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think it's an evil technology that it exists, but I think the way it's going to be used – you know, I think that a technology to put a unique number with a laser quickly on metal – there'd be a lot of non-evil applications for that.
Right.
But Yeah, so maybe someone wants to buy it and repurpose it for good rather than evil. But I wonder if there's anything in the deal that it has to be, you know, you can only buy the patent if you intend to develop it for the purpose that they say it's for. They could do that. It's a voluntary
exchange. That would be interesting. And then again, I don't think it'd be that workable for, you know, some rich self-defense rights advocate to buy it and sit on it, because it seems like somebody else is going to develop the technology anyway. So unless you bought up every single patent.
I know. If it were the patent, then they should buy it. I actually sent this link and info to David Kadria from the War on Guns blog, and he blogged it. He thought it was blogworthy.
It's totally blogworthy.
He's got good taste in what's gun news. So Gaddafi's dead. That's the news of the day.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
The only...
Well, I guess I feel a lot like I did when bin Laden died, and it does make me cringe. I'm not saying Gaddafi was a good guy, but sort of the bloodthirstiness of colleagues and people who I'm around, it gets to me. And I didn't see the video, but I did read about the video of Hillary Clinton watching it and laughing and being sort of a cackling. I think the term used was Lady Macbeth, as opposed to Lady Macbeth, was what people were throwing around for.
Well, people like that get a boner from controlling. I mean, the guy was evil. The guy was f***ing evil, and he's been evil since I was a kid. I mean,
he was our evil friend in Libya for the last decade.
I know. And, you know, the thing that really strikes me about it is the what now, which is, you know, he's probably going to be replaced with some CIA-picked puppet. And the pundits, the Republitron and neocons, are concerned that the country might put their own guy in, and that person might want Sharia law. And I'm thinking, like, of course he will.
Right, right. And as we've seen with all of the American military interventions into the Middle East, things get worse, especially for freedom. And I think a lot of people who maybe are coming to the neocon point of view from sort of a Christian point of view should recognize that in places like Iraq or Afghanistan that have had, you know, Christian minorities, those minorities are pretty much all but wiped out because of the chaos and the fact that you had these secular leaders, at least in Iraq, and we go and just screw everything up, and then you have a power vacuum to where somebody who's religious and more fundamentalist, they tend to get into power, and then people like Christian minorities are persecuted. We really don't do anybody any favors by coming. Well, we do, but when we come in and wreck a country, the people we give favors to are businesses. It's people like Blackwater or Halliburton, and there have been memos in Britain saying, you know, we encourage all British companies to go in and help rebuild Libya. And it makes you wonder, you know, that's probably really what it was all about, was a new public works project for NATO and the NATO countries.
Whereas if those companies had tried to go in and work there 3 months ago, they would have been arrested for treason, because it wasn't time to have permission.
Exactly.
To do that.
And think about what Gaddafi was doing. Gaddafi was increasing ties with China. He had deals with China for the oil. He was talking about trading in gold instead of US dollars. That's another big thing when you talk about American foreign policy in the Middle East, is what they call the petrodollar, or the fact that Saudi Arabia decided to sell all their oil in US dollars, you know, in the 70s. And that's sort of been what has allowed America to have this sort of global reserve currency, is the fact that if you want to buy oil from the major oil producing nations, you have to first buy dollars.
Is that changing?
Well, every time somebody tries to change it, the American foreign policy gets a lot more belligerent towards that country. Saddam Hussein was talking about it. Ahmadinejad is another guy who's often talking about it. And we know from experience that there's been a lot of belligerence towards Iran. Gaddafi was talking about it. Look what happened to them. So it's just sort of one of these, it's almost obvious when you see it. The American empire doesn't want to lose its foothold. And one of the main things that lets us maintain our empire is the fact that oil is sold in United States dollars.
Well, the thing I'm really thinking of is the show that we love, Arrested Development, and how the father was in trouble for doing business with Saddam.
Right.
For selling him cheaply made mini mansions that were based on the floor plan of their model home that they lived in Orange County.
Right, right. Which, again, we can't stress enough how great that show is.
So the last thing I want to say about Gaddafi being dead is, as soon as it happened, I was up at, you know, 5 a.m. and actually watching TV when the news broke of, we think he's dead. And then it was a minute later, it's like, we know he's dead. It's confirmed he's dead. As soon as they said, we think he's dead, they showed footage of people doing the AK dance. And if you don't know what that is, go look on our glossary. If you don't know what anything is, go look on our Freedom Fiends podcast. Yes, this is the Freedom Fiends podcast. Go look on our glossary. It's on the website at freedomfiends.com. You like how I did that, Nima?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty organic. And,
it was a good halfway decent seg.
Yeah.
So, and I was wondering, like, footage of people doing the AK dance. I mean, there were Libyan flags, but I'm like, is this newsreel footage? Is this from last month or last year or 10 years ago? Well, no, it looks high def. It must be recent. And then they mentioned that it was live. And the thing that really struck me was they were doing the AK dance. There were like 20 or 30 people in the frame. And, you know, 2/3 of them had AKs and were holding them up in the air and doing the bounce. And a few of them were firing them off. But there was one guy with a FAL rifle. And he was, like, strutting more than the other guys. Like, I have a FAL.
Right. The right arm of, like, the Maghrib.
Yeah. He was jumping in front of the camera, like, trying to get more attention, I think.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to show it off. Yeah.
I used to have a FAL. It's worth showing off.
It really is.
It's the right arm of the free world. Which Libya?
I don't know if Libya is necessarily part of the free world now.
Well, it's just called that. I mean, what is the free world? But it's called that because it's the main battle rifle of every non-communist country except for America. But they're actually pretty popular and common in Africa too. Which it's every non-communist or out and out tyrannical government.
Right, right. Speaking of guns, I'm working now with a lot of people who probably consider themselves tech nerds or gamers or whatever. And I was very interested to find that there's a lot of overlap between people who are interested in guns or, you know, gun people and I guess what you'd call nerds or gamers. For instance, in this thing I had to do for work where it says aim, and they meant aim like how long it's going to take you to complete this project. And to be funny, I just put pretty decent with iron sights. And the guy who looked at it, you know, complete tech nerd, he just laughed and got such a kick out of it. He was like, oh, that's fantastic, but I doubt he's ever shot a gun in his life. And then when I mentioned Mosin Nagant, you know, everybody's like, oh yeah, because they've used it on multiplayer and Call of Duty or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows what the guns are. People know what iron sights are. People know tech specs for guns. It's interesting.
Yeah. I have a good gun story. I had a naked in school dream. You know the classic naked in school dream?
Yes.
Have you ever had it?
I never had the naked in school dream, I guess because I guess being naked isn't necessarily a fear of mine. I always have it's the semester's almost over and there's a class that I just never went to because I forgot about it.
I've had that too. I've also had where I'm like 2 weeks from graduation and then just walk away from the school, like walk off the campus and just,
or right.
The grounds.
And mine have really morphed into gun dreams a lot lately.
Mine has dreams too. And this is the one I had the other night. I had a dream that I was hanging out with my friend Skip Lunch, friend from punk rock friend from back in the day, who now lives in China. He's married to a woman in China.
It's a great name, by the way.
Skip Lunch, yeah. I know. His real name is Harry Lardner. He'll probably kill me for saying that. But he's been Skip Lunch since, the back in the day. And I had a dream that we were hanging out in some bar in Jamestown, New York, which is where I knew him from. And he had a punk band, which he did back then and still has a punk band in China. But in this dream, his band's bass player had quit that morning, and he asked me to, like, learn all their songs and just sit in for the gig or sit in for a few gigs until they could find somebody.
Yeah.
And so I was in the bar in the afternoon, like, you know, it was still light out, and, like, the door was open, but, you know, it was just the waitresses setting out the ashtrays, and the bartender were the only people there. It was late afternoon, and I was learning the songs with him in the bar. Like, we're on the stage, but there's no audience there.
Yeah.
And we were playing, but people were starting to come in. Like, they heard the music and people were coming in. So there were like 10 or 20 people there, and it was filling up throughout the dream. And it was in New York State. And I looked down and I had a gun on my hip, which is like prison in New York State.
In the whole state, not just the city?
The whole state.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Unless you have a permit and they're really hard to get. I was trying to cover it with my shirt and with my bass. And then I woke up.
yeah, that's a pretty similar analog. I normally have the my gun won't work or my caliber isn't strong enough to damage the enemy.
Stop the bad guy.
That's my recurring dream now. Where I'm trying to get a gun that I definitely need and I can't do anything with the gun I currently have.
In your dreams.
In my dreams, yeah. And it started before I got my first gun. I really wanted to buy this High Point from the liquor store. In Wyoming. Luckily, I didn't have to go that route, but that was my dream. I needed that high point. You know, in real life, that was my dream, like my aspiration.
Well, you rap about it. You said, at one store, I get a high point, 9 milli papers for my joint.
Yeah.
And a pack of Phillies.
And a pack of Phillies.
But if the world were truly free, I could also buy my marijuana. Yeah.
You got it.
Yep. But it was kind of a joke, too, because you wanted a high point just because you liked the idea of you could buy it at a liquor store in Wyoming.
Yeah, and it was affordable, and, you know.
High points suck, man. I bought a High Point 45, and I returned it the next day. It jammed like every other bullet. And it was funny. The guy at the store said, no one ever brings these back. I thought they were pretty good. And we joked about, like, yeah, they never bring them back because they're dropped on the ground at the first robbery.
Well, maybe it's a consistency thing. I mean, I did a lot of research. You know, before I make any purchase, especially one as important as a gun, I'm going to read, you know, all the forums, anything I can read about them. And it seems like a pretty mixed bag. A lot of people swear by them and say, you know, they're good, cheap guns, buy, you know, a dozen or so to pass out to
They're really to heavy, people. Too.
They are. They're heavy. They're ugly. But some people say they get the job done and they've never really had a malfunction.
Well, I think that they're inconsistent. I think I got a bad one. It's and possible. I think I've read forums and other people have, too.
Right.
I have bad luck with guns, though. I've bought several guns that are good guns that I've had that were new that I've had to
that's
send back
true. It's not just your High Point that's malfunctioned on you. You've had some pretty reputable companies that you've bought from that have.
Like my Fal.
Right. I don't know how many names we want to name, but and sometimes I have bad luck with your guns. I think at least two guns you've had me go out and shoot have broken.
And they broke while you were – yeah, the last day you were here, you and your brother
– broke your AK.
Broke my AK and my Mosin. You broke my Kami rifles.
We fixed your Mosin.
But the AK I had to send – did I send it back? Yeah, I sent it back.
My Mosin broke the first day I went shooting with it, right after I bought it. I was able to fix it. The good thing about a Mosin is it's pretty easy to fix.
Yeah. Mosins are 1940s Russian rifles that you can buy for like $150, and the ammo is really cheap, too, if you don't know what a Mosin Nagant is.
It's also in the glossary, so yeah. We can direct you there.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD ships by or before December 6th. Available for pre-order at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. Makes the perfect holiday gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
So it says in the Bible, when I was a child, I had childish things, and now that I'm a man, I put away childish things.
Yeah, it does.
I'm paraphrasing.
Nothing wrong with that.
But I've been putting away childish things. I've been putting away status things, is what I'm getting at.
Putting away square things.
Yeah. I used to love the show The Shield, and part of it was it's exciting. It wasn't like anything else on TV at the time. Breaking Bad, I think it kind of cut some of the ground that Breaking Bad took further.
I think so.
But, you know, Breaking Bad, the heroes are drug dealers. And in The Shield, the heroes are guys who beat up drug dealers and plant drugs on other people and steal drugs from one drug dealer and sell them to another.
Right.
So I can't like those people anymore. So
what are you doing to put away your childish things?
But the filmmaking is great. And it was really like an emotional series for me. I owned all the DVDs and I watched them. I've watched all of them like 20 times each. And it was also, it took place in my old neighborhood in LA. Like almost every scene is somewhere I recognize or a restaurant I've had dinner or a park I've been to or something.
Right. And that, I imagine that makes it feel a lot more real for you.
It really does.
It helps you suspend your disbelief a lot better.
And, you know, the heroes in it don't have like high cheekbones and perfect hair. They kind of like have bellies and kind of look like, you know, they look like real people. And
right.
It's not lit. It's not done with a big crew. It's done handheld 16mm film and looks like a documentary. You know, it's like the cameras aren't mounted. They're all people running with cameras following the people that are running.
Right.
And it's just really well done. And the criminals in it, like, are really realistic looking and acting. The gangbangers.
Yeah.
But I just can't watch it anymore because the heroes are totally immoral people, and I realize that now. So what I've been doing is I've been watching it one more time all the way through and saying goodbye to it, like, in my heart. I started at episode one on the first season. I'm up to the fifth season now of seven seasons, and I watch all four episodes on a DVD, and then I put it into my shredder. My paper shredder has a DVD, a disc shredder.
All right. Why are you going that far? I mean, it seems like you could just not watch it anymore, right?
It's part of the process. And don't anybody write me and say, hey, man, give them to me. It's like, no, they're mine, and I need to destroy them.
And I think that's a good point to make. You know, there are a lot of people who say, you know, because there's videos on YouTube of somebody shooting an iPhone or, people smash guitars at concerts.
Kurt Cobain. But he was just following his hero, Jimi Hendrix. And Jimi Hendrix burned guitars. Pete Townsend from The Who smashed guitars.
Okay. Well, some people will get offended by that kind of thing and saying, you know, that could have gone to some poor slave worker or sweatshop kid in China or something.
Or they should sell it and give the money to the poor. And I'm like, fuck that. It's their property.
Exactly.
And talk about why that's not being callous.
Well, because any piece of property is yours to dispose of as you wish. And the value for you as a human being for destroying something, it could be more than the value of you personally if you gave it away to somebody. And that's the choice you make. Obviously, if you rather smash a guitar than give it away, that's completely your right. In Butler Schaefer's book, Boundaries of Order, he has a great saying that says, you know, how do you know who really owns a piece of property? It's whoever can destroy it. If you truly own a piece of property, then you can destroy it, and nobody else can say, well, you did something wrong there.
The government really owns all our property because they can steal it and destroy it.
Right, and that's what follows, and that's basically what he explains. Is he says, you know, in today's society, you really don't own your property. You pay rent in the form of property taxes because the government can come in and use eminent domain and destroy your what you think is your property just because they want to build, you know, a freeway or give that land to a developer who's going to build a mall, and the property taxes are going to be a lot higher and their tax base is going to increase. So you don't really own your house. If you think you do, the bank owns it, and then the government owns it.
Yep. Even after you pay it off, the government owns it because they can take it anytime they want.
For being delinquent on taxes for just a little bit. You know, they can take your $200,000 house because you owe them a few thousand bucks.
There's a band called KLF. Have you ever heard of them? British acid house and hip hop and techno alternative dance band, KLF.
No.
They were together from 87 to 92. I will link a couple videos of them. They had like one hit that you may or may not have heard. It was a dance hit, like in dance clubs in the early 90s. And they signed to a label or got an advance to do a record, and they got £1 million, which is, in 1990, that's about $1.8 million US right now. And they burned the money and they filmed it. And it was like, it made national headlines in the UK. It was like on the front page of the paper the next day. And people were just shocked and disgusted by it. And this band, I've seen follow-ups with them. They're living in poverty now. And but there's no like, I wish I hadn't burned it, or at least they're not saying that.
Well, that was their decision to make. They owned that money.
Yeah, and it was an artistic statement. It didn't even really, what I liked about it was it didn't even really come with any kind of manifesto. It wasn't, we're doing this to protest the capitalists or anything like that. It was just, we're burning £1 million as art, and they filmed it, and it was, I think it's awesome.
Right.
And a lot of the comments I saw about it were like, that's horrible. They should have blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Well, my wife found a really good example of this too in her reading of blogs. There was some couple that the husband started drinking the breast milk. You know, it was an experimental thing for him, and he was consuming the breast milk because there was surplus. And in the comments, people were livid about it. You know, people who knew mothers who couldn't feed their own kids with breast milk but really wanted to and would prefer that to formula, and saying, you know, all the breast milk that my friend's kids drink is donated. And they were just so upset by the fact that somebody could do that, and they felt like it was morally wrong. And my wife just said, you know, it comes from the woman. It's hers. How could it be any more hers or the family's than coming out of her actual body? It's just so obvious. But some people don't get that. They think that they're very collectivist. They think that whatever humanity produces belongs to humanity as a whole. And you know, we're all individual beings. We gain our rights from that individuality. So anything that we produce belongs to us. Now, I think it's very beneficial for people to share and give as they choose and as they decide. I think we're social animals. We have to work together. But it comes from our individual choices, not somebody else saying, well, it's not fair, because fair is such a subjective word. And what's fair to the people commenting on this blog obviously isn't fair in real life.
The only thing that's fair is not initiating aggression. If you're not initiating aggression on anyone, you're being fair.
You're being fair. That is a great explanation. And that is the only definition of fair in a positive light that I can
even if you're a billionaire and you're surrounded by poverty and not sharing. Although if I were a billionaire and surrounded by I'm poor and I give money away and I help people and give my time.
Right, you know, but it's to causes that you believe in yourself.
Right,
it's
right.
A decision you make. You're voting with your dollar in a good way, not voting as in putting a suggestion in the slave master suggestion box, but showing with your actions what you approve of.
Oh, I just talked to my dad tonight. He got his Rotary Club to donate $300 to Africa Youth Peace Call.
Good for him. Good for him.
I know.
And good for Africa Youth Peace Call.
And good for Rotary International. They do good work.
Yeah.
I like them.
I don't know a whole lot about them.
Well, they usually dig wells and teach literacy.
Are they the ones that are obsessed with eradicating polio?
I don't know.
Or is that the Lions Club? There's so many different...
I think that's the Lions Club.
Okay.
So many other gentlemen's groups.
Right.
Yeah. My dad was actually a Freemason when I was a kid.
Okay.
Freemasons run the country.
But
does your dad run the country, Michael?
No, he does not. But... he gave it up because he said there was, like, too much dogma in it. You know, like, he said by the time the meetings were called to order, they were over.
Or you were ready to go home, at least.
Yeah, No, you know what that comment is, though?
Freemasons around the country.
It's from The Simpsons. There's one where Mr. Burns, like, buys a casino and becomes really twisted and unusual and never leaves. He basically turns into Howard Hughes.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
He's talking to Smithers, and Burns is isolating himself from everybody because he believes everyone is covered with germs.
Yeah.
And Smithers is telling him, oh, sir, it's okay, don't worry. And Mr. Burns looks at Smithers' face and imagines he sees all these little germs on the face, and they're going,
Freemasons run the country!
Simpsons also has a whole episode dedicated to Freemasonry in the Stonecutters episode.
The Stonecutters, right. Yeah, and Mr. Burns is a member, of course.
Of course, of course.
Who controls the British pound? Who keeps the metric system down? We do, we do.
Yeah.
Who robs cavefish of their sight? Who rigs every Oscar night? We do, we do.
I do. Love that song. I find myself singing it randomly throughout
my
life.
Who holds back the electric car? Who makes Steve Guttenberg a star? We do.
You know, I don't even get that reference. Who is Steve Guttenberg? I remember laughing at that probably.
He's a has-been actor.
Obviously.
And he's actually in that scene and he's voicing, singing with it.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah.
It's great when celebrities help rip on themselves.
I know.
Yeah.
So... did you see that video of the lefty, the one called Cafe Owner Explains Why He Booted a Cop?
Yeah, I did see that video. It was in Portland. I guess it's a story from about a year ago. It was broke by this blogger who was really upset by it. She went to get a cup of coffee with her vegetarian daughter at this, I think it was called the Red and Black Cafe.
Which is red and black is the left anarchist flag. The yellow and black is the right anarchist or anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd flag. Shy away from calling it right anarchist.
Okay.
Unless you mean right in the terms of correct.
I like that. Well, anarcho-capitalist is what we are. And we're going to get into the discussion of anarchy today because several people who listen to us want us to talk more about what it is and isn't.
Right. And I think it deserves some discussion.
This is a good segue into it.
Yeah.
For the Freedom Fiends podcast, which you're listening to.
But the original blog on the girl who broke this story was very pro-cop. She was just very upset by the fact, you know, she says when the cop came in, she thanked him for his service, basically, you know, not in so many words. But and this was right after the shootings last year where a few cops were shot in Portland. And then the store owner asked the officer to leave and said, you know, a lot of our customers feel uncomfortable by the fact that you're here. And then the cop made a big stink about it. The blogger made a big stink about it. And they tried to say that, you know, this was like discrimination, you know, like civil rights.
Racial discrimination.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And I thought that they called a press conference, the owner did, which is very good sometimes. I think it was good for him to get out there in public and explain his stance. And to their credit, the news station there actually has the whole press conference raw, not just a soundbite. And I thought his explanation of that concern of the cop, or that argument of the cop that it was like racial discrimination, was very succinct. He said that it's not like that at all, because you choose to put that uniform on.
Yeah.
You don't choose what color your skin is,
yeah,
but you choose to put that uniform on. You can choose not to be a cop.
Calling it racism is just typical horizontal enforcement bullshit. It's like if you criticize the banks, you're anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
It's using – it's basically – and now like the term is terrorist. And I heard someone saying the other day, this made a lot of sense to me, was it's the new like anti-Semite. If you say someone might be a terrorist, whether it's – you know, someone shooting back in the Middle East when they're being shot at, or whether it's an American who reads the Constitution or is an anarchist or libertarian and doesn't do any shooting of anyone, calling them a terrorist, it's the new, like, completely, you can't take anything good from that person again. You've branded that person as the other.
It's social ostracism. It's the new, it's the latest trend in horizontal enforcement.
Terrorist, yeah.
Terrorist
horizontal enforcement has been here forever, but and it, you know,
it's the latest
common
trend.
Ones in the past
were latest
calling
buzzword.
Someone calling right. someone racist or calling someone anti-Semitic when they're not.
I also thought it was really good that this cafe was taking a stand. They didn't back down. They didn't apologize. And they said that there should be a place where people can go, have a cup of coffee, and not have to worry about the police. There should be a space where you can be free of police.
And it was actually like beyond that, there was a reason that they said why in, I don't know if it was in that video or in an interview I read with him, but they said that a lot of their customers are homeless. They're one of the few places that doesn't kick homeless people out. Mm-hmm. And the homeless in Portland and everywhere get hassled by the cops a lot. So it's like,
oh, yeah,
they don't want their customers to have to be sitting next to someone who's hassle them or going to hassle them later.
Right. And that's freedom of association, and it's a great thing. And I'm glad that they were standing up for it and taking a stand for it. And, you know, in a real free society, there should be a place for everybody. There should be a place for people who believe that cops are violent and that they are a drain on society and that they are dangerous. And I think it's excellent that these people have taken a stand for that.
Yep. I kind of dissed them a little bit, and it wasn't very nice, and it was really just kind of joking, kind of chiding lovingly, that they just weren't very good public speakers.
The first guy was decent. He was what I'd expect. The last woman who worked, I think, was a volunteer for an organization called Cop Watch, which is also interesting that the leftish version of that is Cop Watch, whereas the voluntarist is Cop Block. It's much more
Cop
active.
Block. Yeah.
We're actually going to do something. We're not just going to watch.
And I was thinking, like, if this cafe had been called the Yellow and Black Cafe instead of the Red and Black Cafe, you know, if it had been ANACAP, voluntarist, anarcho-capitalist, instead of Workers of the World Unite anarchist, which is what these people were. They were, you know, it was a union shop. They were members of the IWW, the International Workers of the World, who actually the IWW used to meet at a cafe in LA that I used to go to. They come in once a week to work on their newsletter, and they take over like three tables, and they were really loud. And I talked to one of the guys that worked there. He hated them because they were really bad tippers. And I'm like, really?
That's
the International Workers of the World were bad tippers every time.
Because they probably don't like the tip system. They want everybody to have a living wage and get paid the same thing.
Or they're just cheap and don't walk their talk. But
yeah,
if this cafe had been called the Yellow and Black Cafe, you know, first of all, I was thinking, like, if this was Keene, New Hampshire, these people would probably be a lot better public speakers, because it just seems like all of those people are.
All those free state people.
And secondly, I think they would have been more humorous about it. Like, I pictured a couple different scenarios. I think that they'd let the cop stay. The open carrying owner with the gun on his hip would come over to the cop and say, "You're welcome to stay here if you go put your gun in your car while you're in here." You know, while videotaping it for YouTube. Or, you know, they'd come over and say, and even say, like, "Hey, you're welcome to stay, and here's a free muffin if you could tell me on camera why you think you're not an immoral person," and put it on YouTube.
Yeah, there could have there was definitely some missed opportunities. I think the other thing was, and this did strike me as upsetting, and again, I wasn't there. I don't know if it was just a clerk who was untrained or what their policy is, but they actually served the guy his coffee. He bought it and paid for it, and you know, and I say this a lot, that green is the real color, and that's why I say you don't need laws to enforce, you know, non-discrimination or things like that, because business owners need revenue, and they're not going to necessarily turn somebody away because they're a certain type of person, unless that brings them more money from other type of people, which it could. But I don't think they should have let the guy pay for his coffee and then asked him to leave. I think that was a little off.
Yeah. If I had a cafe, I'd let cops in, but I'd with them and film it and put it on YouTube,
right?
You know, and I just picture, like, if it was any of the people that I know that are anarcho-capitalists, ANCAP, I guess anarcho-capitalists, most people say ANCAP, I say ANACAP. I don't obey the rules of how to say what kind of anarchist I am. ANACAP.
Yeah.
Or voluntarians, you know, like Pete Eyre, you know, or Adam versus the Man, like just any of the people I like watching who do activism that I think is really cool and well done, like they wouldn't be scared like these people were, which I can't blame these people. It's a pretty scary thing to like challenge a cop.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like a lot of the ANACAPs I know are just fearless with messing with cops in funny ways. And it's kind of more of a, and we do this on the Freedom Fiends podcast. Like, we'd rather laugh at the man than be scared, you know?
Right. Well, they feed off fear. Like we said earlier, the government line is, you should be more afraid. So if you buy into that, then you're supporting the system. You're giving your consent. If you say, afraid of you?
I really liked one of the comments when I posted that on Facebook. Some guy said, who was an ANACAP, said, I hate commies, you know, because these guys are communists, literally, or something close to it. He said, I hate commies, but I hate cops more. Go, commie, go.
Right, right.
Well, let's segue into talking about what anarchism really is. Jeff Campbell said, in an upcoming Freedom Fiends episode, could you please give a lesson on what anarchism really is? So, anarchy.
Anarchy.
There's a song by this punk band I really liked from back in the day. I forget who it is, but the chorus of it is, Anarchy Burger, hold the government. Anarchy Burger, hold the government.
That's the chorus?
Yeah.
That's great. I'd love to sample that.
I should try to find it.
You should.
I think it's the Vandals.
Mm. Okay.
So,
okay.
Anarchy. What anarchy is it? Literally means an absence of government, and an anarchist is a person who advocates for an absence of government.
Correct. I'm glad you gave us the definition, and that's really what it is. But like any word in the English language, especially a word that, you know, talks about a political philosophy, it means different things to different people.
And there's different flavors of it. And
totally.
Really, one problem I have with anarchist, with the phrase anarchist, I alternately call myself an anarchist and a libertarian. I don't see them as mutually exclusive, but some people do. Like an ANACAP or anarcho-capitalist was ANCAP. A fellow ANCAP tonight was kind of taking me to task because I called myself a libertarian. And he said that libertarians, while they're light years ahead of most left-right paradigm statists, libertarians are kind of mini statists in their own way. And I disagreed with him. I mean, Libertarian Party members mainly, but
yeah.
Libertarian to me just means the opposite of authoritarian. Like
exactly.
The word.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I've heard libertarianism described as a political philosophy wherein liberty is the most important political goal in general. Yep. Social goal is probably better.
And I often say I'm a libertarian when people ask what I am and they're not nuanced on the various differences of the different flavors of anarchist and libertarian and voluntarist.
Yeah, I go back and forth. It's about register, you know,
yeah.
Just like you say.
I have problems with saying I'm an anarchist. I do say I'm an anarchist, but for most people, that makes them think of either people throwing bombs or people kicking in the windows of the Starbucks.
Yeah, and people also think of nihilists and so you just don't believe in anything,
yeah, kind of thing. You hate yourself and you hate everything. You're a nihilist.
Right.
At worst, those are what they think at worst. Or at best, they think of those international worker of the world types in Portland.
Right, right. And, you know, it is important to realize that words do mean, you know, millions of different things to millions of different people. For instance, and they change over time and evolve. And that's why some days we say anarchist, some days we say libertarian, some days we say voluntarist or anarcho-capitalist to describe ourselves. But think liberal used to mean somebody like John Locke, somebody who thought freedom was the highest goal, or somebody like Thomas Jefferson, you know, classical liberals. Now, when you think of liberal, you tend to think more Marxism or progressive. You don't think of it in the same way.
Let me ask you this. Is there anything in the pure definition of anarchist that absolutely includes not violating the non-aggression principle?
No, and that's why I think people...
That's a problem I have with it.
It is a problem. You know, like you said in the definition, in the textbook definition, all it really is an absence of government. Now, me personally, I think, like I explained earlier in the cast, that government is the biggest perpetrator, generally, of aggression. So that's why I tend to say I'm an anarchist, because I believe a society without government, you would solve 98 to 99% of the problems of aggression.
But, you know, I don't see why it would be inaccurate to call those people in the Bader-Meinhof syndrome that were out, that it's based on real people. I don't see why it would be wrong to call those people anarchists. They didn't really have a clear political philosophy. They were kind of Marxist, but their main thing was they hated all government and wanted to blow it up. They were anarchists, and you and I are anarchists too, but we don't blow things up and never would.
Well, see, then you get into a sticky situation as far as what's your definition of government. If you define government as a monopoly of force, then maybe anarchy does have, in some sense, a repudiation of force, and then tacitly approves the non-aggression principle.
Well, I would say only in that as soon as you start throwing bombs, you're becoming a government.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And that's why when you talk about left anarchists or people who say that, you know, the goal of communism theoretically was a stateless society, is that in those instances, you have to look to some type of monopoly of violence in order to get there.
Yeah.
So that's why I would say
that's my problem. That's my problem with a lot of gun-hating lefties that have like Che Guevara shirts on. Not just the ones who do it for fashion, but the ones who really believe in Marxism and believe in communism and believe it should be enforced by any means necessary. The
right.
The any means necessary includes, you know, the citizens' revolution where they use guns to take over the factories. And
right, or French Revolution style thing where they just pull out the guillotine. And it doesn't even have to be that extreme. I mean, I see that same sentiment in the tax the rich, and the rich should pay their fair share. They're asking for the government to not stop using their guns. They're just asking the government to point their guns in a different direction.
Yeah.
I'm glad we finished each other's sentence.
It must be love,
yeah.
No homo.
Finish each other's sandwiches?
Sandwiches. What's that from?
Arrested That's Development, funny. Baby. They're not paying us. I wish they would give us free new episodes, would. But I don't think they have any.
They would produce free episodes that are based on our ideas.
One day.
You know, by the way, Bader-Meinhof syndrome, I didn't know this when we talked about it recently. Did you know that it was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Foreign Picture?
No, but I mean, from the way you described it, I'm glad. I'm glad it did. I'd like to get back to our discussion of anarchy and labels. And, you know, maybe there is – I think there is some sort of need for a better word. And I think that's why you have people who are libertarian rock stars, as you've coined the phrase, who use different terms in different months.
Which is nothing about music. They're not musicians. They are rock star level libertarians where we're like
right.
– we're garage band level libertarians.
Right, right. People like Lou Rockwell or Stefan Molyneux or Ian Freeman. But maybe I think there is a need. And I think the problem with anarcho-capitalism is both of those terms mean different things to different people. Anarchy to a lot of people means violence, although that's not the true definition. That's the connotation. And capitalism, a lot of people construe that as corporatism. They think the America we live in now is capitalist. They think that capitalism is what we have now. It's Wall Street, which to me, capitalism is just private ownership of capital. So I think that that's kind of a term that fails in certain ways.
Yeah, capitalism versus corporatism. That's a big problem with perception, especially on the left and with young people.
Right, right.
You know, they blame corporations and want the government to deal with it, but they don't realize that the government are the real reason that those corporations exist. In LibPair, there would be large businesses, but there wouldn't be big business the way we know it now.
Right, right. There wouldn't be massive corporations in the bureaucratic sense that we have now that have government sanction and the government guns to protect them and various things like that. The banking system would also be vastly different. And that's the major problem is what we can call the bankocracy, which is this fractional reserve system of banking where, you know, they don't have to keep all the money that they owe to people on hand. And they're guaranteed by a printing press in the form of the Federal Reserve. I don't think that would exist in any form similar to that in LibPair. I think you could have fractional reserve banking, but it would be on a much smaller scale as far as the fraction, and it would be on a much smaller scale in the fact that they would have market regulations. You know, if you couldn't pay your people back, you would fail, you would go under, and people would never go to those type of bankers again. So I think there is a need for a new word. Maybe it should be based on the non-aggression principle, because I really think that there's a consensus that that's really the root of what we're getting at here.
Voluntarist is a really good word, but I have problems with it.
It's kind of weak sounding, and people confuse it with volunteering for the United Way or AmeriCorps or something.
It's called volunteerism, which sounds really similar.
Right. In fact, somebody posted something on a video I have where I explain voluntarism, and they say Nima Vedati explains volunteerism, which obviously I wasn't explaining going out and building houses for Habitat for Humanity. I was explaining the fact that we shouldn't aggress against each other and use violence to solve social problems.
I mean, I kind of think of libertarian, anarchist, and voluntarist as interchangeable terms, at least for me. I am all three of those things, and I think you are too.
For me and right now. But I think we all need to put our minds together to still keep trying to come up with a better term, a more succinct, and a term that basically explains it much better to that lay person, so that people will hear it and think, oh, that's great, instead of, oh, you're an anarchist, or, oh, you're a tea partier, because they hear libertarian, or, oh, you like to go and hammer things at 9 a.m. on a Habitat for Humanity project.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, nappy? Well, no, I guess you can't use that.
Non-aggression principally.
Zappy.
Non-nappy.
No, that doesn't work
Zappy.
Either.
Zero aggression principally. I don't know. Let's work on it. Let's open it up. Let's open up the lines if you want to call in and let us know here at Freedom Fiends.
We don't have that yet, but comment us. Maybe we could start a thread or have a contest.
Ian wants us to do a – Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live and Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM, wants us to do a live show, like in addition to our podcast.
I wouldn't mind that. I have no problem.
I know. You want to do it. I'm kind of like, eh. Because I really like how edited I make this to where it makes us sound better. And
not only that, but you like doing the editing.
I like editing. It's one of the times I feel like the purest and most beautiful and efficient in my day.
I do too. And I really like – I think that's the main thing I'm going to miss at my TV job. Is editing, is being in the edit bay. Nobody's going to bug me because they know I've only got 30 minutes to edit it.
You're not going to stop editing. You're going to get a better computer.
I'm working on that. And that's the other thing is I feel like I'm going to open up my world being able to edit and not have 30 minutes to slap something together, but be able to really work on it. You know, like some of the scenes for Guns and Weed or the Eye on Me video, which I took my time on.
Yep.
Let's slow cook.
Well, I'm always willing to do some voiceover of me or DJ for your stuff if you need something. If you need an extra voice in there or two.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. And I'm working on getting a new workstation soon. And after that will come a camera. Obviously, I'm not made of money, although I did get a raise by switching my jobs. So that is very nice for me. I hope to...
Really? You're making more? I thought you were making less, but it was worthwhile.
A lot more.
You're making more. Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It is awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I like doing voiceover. I like recording DJ doing it too. I kind of feel like my vocal booth is like a sacred place. It's weird. I always wanted to have one in my home, and now I have one now that I'm an adult.
That's really nice. I kind of want that for myself, too. I've always been, you know, recording in the corner of whatever room my desk is in, so I've never had a dedicated, necessarily, recording space. But you have sort of a throne, a shrine. Yours is a shrine.
It is. Yeah. It's lit like a shrine, too. It's got, like, blue light and blue walls in it. And sometimes I go just stand in it.
Oh, yeah.
Late at night
I don't
alone
you.
When I'm not recording anything. It's like a prayer or confessional prayer booth.
I did really enjoy recording in your vocal booth when we were making the movie.
You look good, too. And, you know, the lighting in there is so sexy, and I didn't set out to have it that way. What I did was I went to Target and bought, like, the cheapest lamp I could buy that was LED because I wanted something with zero hum. I didn't want an incandescent or fluorescent light bulb in there. And it just turned out slightly blue, and I'd already put blue blankets up in there, and it just looks so good, man.
It's calming.
Yeah.
It makes you forget any nervousness you might have in recording the coming piece.
Yep. You know, when we posted the pictures on Freedom Fiends of how we record, that includes pictures of that vocal booth, and I posted it on Facebook, a few of my friends from San Francisco were like, how'd you make that vocal booth? And I said, oh, it's out of a spare closet in my basement. And one of them was like, spare closet? What do you mean? And then another one was like, basement? What is this basement of which you speak? These are like friends that are my age that live in studio apartments in San Francisco.
Right, right. It's also important to note, and you can edit this if you feel like it, that your vocal booth has been christened by a 38 special slug.
I wouldn't say that.
All right, fair enough.
I wouldn't ever say that anyone should ever fire a gun in the city. That's illegal. Don't do that.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that. I didn't do that.
Moving on.
So tell me you have some stories this week.
Yeah, I got a couple if I can fit them in. We've got 10 minutes. We're good. We're good to go.
You got 8 minutes.
First of all, I think on a previous cast, we had mentioned that the government wanted me to do some paperwork for them, and they were going to force me to. I'm a natural procrastinator when it comes to things like that, so did not fill out my, let's see, what is it called? The American Community Survey. It's administered by the U.S. Census Bureau, which if you've read the Constitution, if you're into that kind of thing, I really don't buy into the whole social contract thing, but if you are a constitutionalist, you will note that the part about the census really just indicates that there should be some type of headcount for purposes of allotting congressional seats and the like.
Just number of people, no other information.
Right. This is in addition to that. It's not constitutionally mandated, and yet it has the force of law behind it.
Well, I'd say that the regular one isn't constitutionally mandated
because there's
anymore.
More than one question.
Because it's 10 questions.
Right.
One question, do you exist? No, it should be how many people are in your household.
How many people are in your household?
That should be it. Exactly. That's the constitutional one.
This goes much further, and it has the force of law. They sent me another letter saying, you have not responded to this in 3 weeks. My wife bought my dog a Halloween costume, apparently. Sorry. I'll take a picture and send it to you. He just walked in with a... He looks like a pumpkin. Anyway, they sent me a letter saying, you haven't filled this out in 3 weeks. We'd like to remind you that your response is required by law. And then it has the code, you know, I hate it when they bring up these government numbers. Title 13, U.S. Code, Sections 141 and 193. Who's read that? They explain that like people know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
So, okay, basically, they say, and that's where they leave it. They say it's required by law. This is the law. It imposes a penalty for not responding. We estimate the survey will take about 38 minutes to complete. So give us 38 minutes of your time or you will face our government penalty.
I know.
So
I'd send him a bill. I'd fill it out and then send him a bill and say, you know, I make $40 an hour.
We ended up filling it out, and we're curious to see what they get back to us because we left a lot of questions blank. We tried to fill out some that we thought weren't too intrusive. We left the names blank. We left a number of other things blank. Race, I never put race on any kind of census documentation. People who are into history will note that that is part of how they rounded up people of Japanese descent during World War II for internment. So I am not a fan of giving out my race or anything like that in a census form. It asks questions that would allow them to track you. It asks things like, basically, when do you leave for work in the morning? How long does it take you to get to work? If they ever wanted to snatch you up, that would be how they could do it super easy. So we obviously left that blank. It asks you what your main task is at your job. So not only do they ask you where you work, but basically what you're doing all day, what department you're in.
Wow.
It's very detailed. And
now, does it say anything about guns? I heard they were going to ask you about guns, but maybe didn't.
Not in this one, but there are a number of surveys, actually. This is not the only one. The federal government also administers other surveys. I think the other ones are generally more voluntary. I participated in one when I lived in Riverton where they actually paid me. I think it was actually privatized in some way, like they paid a company to administer the survey. They paid me. They asked me if I wanted to do it. That's fair. I could buy into that. It was basically for drugs, you know, like what is your drug use? Like, have you used pot in the past 30 days kind of thing.
Did I ever talk about how I did paid drug research a few times in the past?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Again, yeah. There's nothing wrong with surveys. There's nothing wrong with calculating.
Well, these were probably paid for by the government, but that's back when I didn't care.
There's
but.
Something wrong with that, obviously, because the money has to be taken from somebody or printed, which devalues the currency. But I find nothing socially wrong with organizations wanting to do market research or know more about a certain market. And indeed, this is in the explanation from this survey. It says, it's a frequently asked question, how do I benefit by answering the American Community Survey? Communities need data about the well-being of children, families, and the older population to provide services to them. By responding to the American Community Survey questionnaire, you are helping your community to establish goals, identify problems and solutions, and measure the performance of programs. All right. Me and my wife, aren't in any of these benefited groups. We don't have children. We're not elderly. So I don't know how these things are going to benefit us. We also, I don't want the government to steal more money to build more highways, schools, or hospitals.
I know.
How do I benefit from my taxes being increased? Or from the feds printing more money to build a new highway? I don't benefit at all from
you
that.
You don't. And f*** that noise. F*** that shit.
It's so square.
So square.
I mean, the paper's rectangular, but it should be square.
That's funny. So, speaking here on Freedom Fiends podcast, on The Freedom Fiends, on The Freedom Fiend Radio, you got one more little story here. Not little story, one more big breaking news story here.
If you're a listener or you're a Freedom Fiend, you've probably heard the episode where I had my family in League City, Texas, helping out with
But, you know, I have to interrupt and say that I am really enjoying this e-cigarette from Vaporsmiths. That's Vaporsmiths.com.
Me too. I've been vaping mine all casts. I'm
here. Listen.
Vaping the Reds flavor.
Nicotine. So go on.
So
go
refreshing.
On. Do tell.
So my family down in League City, Texas, they've got more cars than there are people in their household. For some reason, the government there, the local city government, the code enforcement people, which there's no more obviously tyrannical thing that affects people than the code enforcement department of any police organization. They take issue with the fact that my family has property, apparently. They've got an extra Thunderbird, an extra Jaguar, and they've also have a car of theirs that hasn't been registered. Neither of these cars have been registered recently because they're not driven. But that doesn't make them any less my family's property, just the fact that they haven't been driven. And yet, they say these need to be inspected, registered, and driven every now and then if you're going to own them and keep them
here. You have to drive them. What if you just registered them and didn't drive them?
I suppose you could, but I think they're usually in these things, there's a clause that say they have to move every now and then. You know, they have to be, you know, and that's a lot of times how people will complain on them. They'll say, you know, they haven't been driven in a month or they've sat in the same space for this certain period of time. So they start harassing my family, multiple contacts trying to get us to do something, saying we're going to tow this, literally saying we're going to steal your property. And that's what it comes down to. So my family built a fence around these two cars, took their own initiative, used their own money, built a fence so that these supposed people wouldn't be able to see them, all right? They still came out. The fence wasn't up to code. The fence isn't appropriate. They gave us a letter, or they gave my family a letter. And the first sentence of the letter says, "Here at League City, we respect your private property and want to protect it." And then the letter went on to explain how their code enforcement does this. Basically, the premise was, it was sort of a positive, right? They were saying, you know, these kind of old cars bring down property values. And so we're protecting that. And also, oh, and this was rich. When there are, basically it explained that when there are abandoned cars, teenagers are more likely to commit acts of vandalism. So really, they were blaming the fact that my family owned this property on their property in their driveway, not bugging anybody, could contribute to teenagers.
The delinquency of minors.
Yeah. That's hilarious. It's just so ironic that the first sentence was about protecting your property, when that's obviously not what they were doing.
So do you want me to beep out the name of the city or leave it in?
Leave it in, because F them, and they know about this. It's not like my family's made
They're
it
aware
any
of
secret.
It.
My little brother, Frank, who's also in the Guns and Weed movie and has been interviewed on Freedom Fiends, he told the cop off in front of the door. You know, I explained to him, A, you probably shouldn't have answered the door. B, you shouldn't talk to cops. And he said, what would 20-year-old Nima have done? And so I've got to give him that. You know, he's a young guy. He's passionate.
I don't know that you should never talk to police. I mean, Pete Eyre talks to police all the time and messes with them and gives it on videotape. And I love it.
Fair enough.
And I think it does a great service. I think you should talk to cops and question their motives and ask them why they think what they're doing is right when it's not.
Right. And that is totally what Frank did. He said, first of all, he said this isn't constitutional and went into the Fourth Amendment. I told Frank, you know, and that's really the flaw with the Constitution is it says, you know, you're the Fourth Amendment, basically your property. You can't be deprived of it without due process of law. You know, these people in League City would say, well, there is due process. We wrote you a letter. We wrote it in the code. That's due process enough for us.
Well, and eminent domain is also in the Constitution, which was originally for like putting through railroads, but now I'm sure they could use eminent domain to take your car.
Right, which is why I'm so far past that, saying, oh, that's not constitutional. It might be against some spirit of it, at least as far as some of the founders.
I like using the phraseology, you're being immoral. Most people understand
and that's,
that.
And that's what he went to next, because the cop said, well, you know, it's the government, it's the law, yada, yada. And Frank said, well, what you're doing is not right.
I think the word immoral is better, because not right, first of all, a lot of people say you're not right to a cop. Not that many say you're being immoral. And immoral holds so much more weight than this ain't right, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing Frank. Kudos to him for going to task.
Kudos to him. And you know, you are right, because a lot of times cops believe they are moral. They think they're super moral. They think that they're there to do the moral thing. And, you know, horizontally, people enforce that by giving cops that pass and saying.
Which is why it was so shocking to that lady in Portland that those people told the cop to leave their private property.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, most cafes give free food to cops for two reasons. One is they think that the cops will be around more. The place will be less likely to get robbed. The cops will respond quicker and with more care if it's robbed. But also, I think it's kind of like an unspoken shakedown in a lot of situations. Yeah. It's like, even though you're being forced at the barrel of a gun to pay taxes, to pay us to protect you, we might decide not to protect you if you don't pay us more by giving us free donuts every day.
I'd like to see a business owner give free donuts or free coffee to an open carrier. So if you walk in with your gun, we'll give you a
discount.
There
you go. Awesome. Well, you know, there's a thing in Moulin Labe that's kind of like that. It's
it was a tax break for people who train. Yeah.
They pass a law in Wyoming that if you're open carrying, you pay less sales tax or no sales tax. And the idea being that people who carry their own gun make it so we need less police. And the people that aren't willing to carry a gun, they need to be paying for their police.
Right.
You know, it's a very minarchist, incrementalist, libertarian novel.
Right. But again, we can't really find fault when you're taking away money or power from the government.
And even if it's done slowly and with the rules and games of the state, I'm all for it.
As long as the buck stops there.
And a lot of anarchists aren't, you know. I think it's different than voting. I mean, I guess I'm not a pure voluntarist, because if there were someone that I thought could really do that, I'd vote for him. I mean, I'm going to vote for Ron Paul.
Yep.
But it's more of like, I'd like to see that happen. I could make popcorn and watch that happen, you know, then I really believe in the process.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that topic definitely deserves more discussion. And maybe we can address voting in a little bit more depth in the next cast, because we are kind of running low on time.
Yep. All right. Let's wrap it up, B.
So, something for you to look forward to. Enjoy the next cast, and thank you to everybody who's supporting Freedom Fiends right now, all our listeners on Liberty Radio Network. Thanks to Ian for helping to syndicate us on Liberty Radio Network. Thanks to Vaporsmiths for supporting us. And deepest thanks go to anybody who listens to us and any Freedom Fiends we have out there. It is serving y'all that makes me sleep well at night.
Tell two friends, review and rate on iTunes, and make a donation if you want. And then we're going to hear a song called Cop on Every Corner by my friends, the War Hippies. We used part of this in the movie with permission.
Ah, yeah, this is great. This is what you should do if you own a coffee shop and you want to keep the cops out. Just play this song on a loop.
That'd be great. So hit it.
Peace.
Hey, big.
Cop on every corner, looking for a blowjob. Cop on every corner.
you hot ass new out now.
There's a pig on the corner, he wants to eat your donut. What you better do about? Oh my god!
Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.